A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. Jesus journeyed to a city called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd accompanied him. As he drew near to the gate, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. A large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he was moved with pity for her and said to her, "Do not weep." He stepped forward and touched the coffin. At this, the bearers halted, and he said, "Young man, I tell you, arise." The dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, exclaiming, "A great prophet has arisen in our midst, and God has visited his people." The report about him spread through the whole of Judea and in all the surrounding region. The Gospel of the Lord. Today we celebrate the feast of one of the most inspiring saints in the history of the church, Saint Monica. She wept like the widow of Nain over the spiritual death of her husband, of her mother-in-law, of her son. But Jesus acted. He saw her tears. As one bishop would say to her, "The son, the object of so many tears, will not perish." So she prayed on, she fasted on, she continued on in terms of her own encouragement. It took her 15 years of prayers and fasting and of joy in the faith in order to convert her husband Patricius, who converted just a year before his death. She took so much grief from her living mother-in-law, but before her mother-in-law died, she also embraced the Christian faith. It took 17 years after her husband Patricius had died when she went through an even more emotional washing machine, when she saw her son go to the big city. And there, even though he had been a catechumen, he hadn't been baptized when he was a teenager. He really hadn't fully accepted the faith. While he was there, first he became a heretic, a Manichaean, a philosophy that believed that there more or less was light and darkness on both sides, and there's a certain knowledge that brings us into the light, but everything else is in the darkness, two principles waging war against each other. First, he became a Manichaean. Then he started shacking up with a girlfriend. Then he became a father outside of wedlock. Then he started to get more and more virulent against the faith. He used to come home and mock Monica with all he had learned in school, gave her such incredible grief with blasphemy that though it broke her maternal heart, she forbid him from staying in her home or eating at her table because she just couldn't take the blasphemies any longer. It was about as bad as it could get. When he announced that he was going to go to Rome after the great education they had paid for him to receive in order to become a teacher of rhetoric there, she resolved to go with him because she thought if she didn't go with him, there would be no hope for him to ever become a Christian. But while they were there in the port of Carthage, she was having a prayerful vigil in the church. He said, "I'm going to go say bye to a friend who's leaving on another boat." He totally lied, totally left his mom there in the huge port with nobody to care for her, and took off all by himself. Kind of showed what a selfish young man he was at the time. But Monica didn't give up. With great perseverance, she made her way over to Rome, and she started searching the city of Rome. You know, imagine for a second, you had a child, and you knew your child had left you and just gone to New York, and you're going to go to New York to try to find your son among 19 million people. Monica went, knowing that God would help her to find her son. She crisscrossed Rome. Eventually, she found out a few people who had known him, and they said he had taken off to Milan. So off she went to Milan, praying the whole time. And when she was there, she found that he had come under another master, a great rhetorician in his own right, who used to be the governor of the entire northern part of the Roman Empire. But when he went to settle a dispute among Christians, he did it by reminding them of who Christians are supposed to be, even though he wasn't a Christian. And an 8-year-old boy started shouting out from the crowd, "Ambrosi, Episcopus, Ambrosi, Episcopus." And St. Ambrose, that great rhetorician, even though he wasn't anything more than a catechumen at this time, was baptized, was ordained a deacon, a priest, and a bishop, became the indomitable bishop of Milan. And Augustine started to listen to him because of his great art of rhetoric, but slowly but surely he started to lead Augustine in the ways of faith. And Augustine converted shortly before his mother would die. She said she could die happy that her son had now become a Christian. Little did she know that all the tears that she had shed would not only bring her son into the church, but after he had gotten back to Africa, he would found a monastery. Then from that monastery, just like, in a sense, what happened to St. Ambrose, his mentor, he would go into a city square to listen to the bishop, because it was only the bishops who really preached at that time. The bishop was getting old and frail, and he confessed in front of the big crowd who could barely hear him, "I'm not going to be able to do this much longer. Please pray that the Lord may send someone who can continue to preach in my stead." And the whole crowd starts looking around at Aurelius Augustinus, one of the greatest teachers of rhetoric in the whole church, who had now founded a monastery. And basically all the fingers started to point in his direction. So the bishop called him forward, ordained him a priest, gave him the faculties to preach, and when he died, Augustine succeeded him as Bishop of Hippo. What's the first thing we learn here? First thing we learn is never to give up in praying for our family members who have wandered from the practice of faith. If we pray with the insistence of Saint Monica, we have every hope that what the Lord did in the life of Augustine, not just bring about his conversion, but bring about his becoming one of the greatest saints who ever lived, can occur. We should never despair. And it was because of those prayers, point two, that we call Monica now Saint Monica, because it was only because she had to pray so long and so persistently that she was able to be purified and made one of the great saints in history as well. But I want to focus on the last point on something a little bit larger. You know, last week when we were on the World Youth Day pilgrimage, we had a mass in Valladolid, which was the capital of Spain up until the mid-1500s. And there was this gorgeous Augustinian church and convent, a monastery for Augustinian friars to live. And in the back, the priest who had allowed us to celebrate Mass, they wanted to show off this newly restored monastery, this convent. It was totally gorgeous. But as we were back in the enclosed courtyard, there were all these fabulous paintings of St. Augustine in all the stages of his life, including the stage with St. Monica. And it was a tremendous opportunity to be able to explain to the kids everything about the life of the great St. Augustine, who's here on our pulpit and again right here at the coronation. But the kids immediately linked it to something that had occurred at the beginning of our pilgrimage when we were in Fatima, and how another mother, the Mother of God and our Mother, had come down to those three little shepherd children with a maternal heart, begging for them to join her in praying for the return of all her sons and daughters to the faith, to pray for the conversion of sinners. And little Francisco, who had all his own issues, he was a little bit of a selfish kid, a distracted boy, Francisco took that on. He started praying on his knees the entire time. He started tying cords around him as various penances. He started fasting. He started offering up all his pain. He would die within a couple of years. He started to offer up all his pain for the conversion of sinners. We all need to be Monicas. If we happen to come from a family in which everybody's practicing the faith and everybody's going on holiness, that doesn't mean all the members of our larger family are in that circumstance. We know that so many have wandered very far away from the Lord. And Our Lady, like Saint Monica, prays without ceasing for them and wants our collaboration, wants our sacrifices, wants our pray in the rosary, wants our pray in the Mass for their conversion. Not merely so that they won't go to hell and be saved, that's the first part, but so that they can become the Augustines of the 21st century. And if we pray like that for them, then we too will become sanctified as well.